Mandel press conference, August 14, 1970.
Mandel. Well, I was talking to Eric, blame it on Dave Hugel, who had no consideration for your burdens this morning.
Yeah,
he should be empathetic. Oh, I don't think that's true. Do you want some? Needless to say, I'm happy to be past the primary. I had hoped it would come through as we did and didn't have too much difficulty. Last night I picked up, I guess it was last night, the two leading Baltimore newspapers, and was very pleased to see a picture in my case and also Mr. Mandel's, but I'm becoming somewhat sympathetic to Mr. Agnew, who had a little problem getting to be a household word. Both of those papers had a caption on that had my name incorrect. But it was close, so I guess everybody knows who did win the Republican primary by now. Gentlemen, I have no statement particularly. We are getting into the second phase of campaign, what I've called the second phase. And I wanted to have this press conference this morning so that if you had anything that you'd like to ask, I'd try to respond to it. We're going to move out into the hinterlands from this point on. I think starting, Jack, on Saturday, is it? On Saturday, we're going to Southern Maryland, and I guess we'll be less and less around the Baltimore area on a full-time basis. I expect to be in and campaigning here, but that's it. Any questions?
Mr. Blair, do you expect to enter an open debate with Governor Mandel at any point?
I certainly hope to. I announced my candidacy, you know, on the 16th of June, and I was asked that question there, and I said, yes, I very much wanted to do that. I thought it would be helpful. I thought it would tend to point out the issues and also bring the candidates into focus, and I still do. And I hope Governor Mandel will accept that as the offer to debate.
Would you hope to go into television debate with him on any occasion?
Oh, yes, yes. Television appearances, certainly, and television debate as well. And I think we've been offered one opportunity right now to appear jointly, and I've accepted it.
Vice President Agnew is coming in to campaign for you the first part of October. Will that be his only visit?
I'm not sure what his schedule will permit. It conceivably could be. I hope very much that we'll have him later in the campaign as well. I realize, of course, that he has commitments all over the United States in this election year. And we have, I believe, the one commitment. I haven't asked him for a second one, but I may if his schedule will permit it.
What is the date he's coming in?
I don't know the exact date. I've said the first week in October. I believe he is scheduled to appear or will be appearing somewhere in the Washington area at that time, but I don't know the date exactly.
You're wearing an Agnew watch. How does the vice president feel about that?
He hasn't seen this one. I got a strange response yesterday morning. I was campaigning at 6 a.m. or about 6:30 down at Bethlehem Steel after about 2 hours sleep, and some man came by and saw the Agnew watch and said, I never shake hands with a man that wears that. And I thought for a moment that he was opposed to Agnew, but I think he thought I was insulting the vice president.
Does the vice president wear one?
Not that I know of. I haven't seen him recently.
Mr. Blair, because of your past and present associations, right, close associations with the vice president, the charge is being made rather quietly at this point that your candidacy is really presenting you as a surrogate for the vice president, that you're not your own man, and that you really are sort of a stand-in and will be a stand-in for the vice president in Maryland if you're elected.
I've heard that charge, Larry. It's one to which I think I'd respond this way. Obviously, you can't be a surrogate for the vice president of the United States because the vice president has absolutely no jurisdiction in the state of Maryland. Now, I've said before and I'll say again, I'm very happy to have his personal friendship and particularly his confidence. He has suggested to me that he thought I'd be a good candidate in this campaign. I've accepted his offer to come into the state. But beyond that, I'm my own man. I don't think there's any question about that. I'm running as Stan Blair, and I don't think there's anything that the vice president can do that's going to change that.
What issue or issues will you press hardest in this campaign?
I think the principal issue, and I don't say this unkindly, is Governor Mandel. What he is, what his record has been, what kind of governor he's been as an interim governor, and what kind of a governor we could expect him to be if elected to a full term. Now, that's against the backdrop of a great many things, but the most important thing, as I see it, for the people of the state of Maryland is to choose a leadership as we go into the 70s, and of course, in this case, for the first 4 years, is going to indicate the directions that we're going. And I think it basically comes down to, is Governor Mandel the governor from Maryland? And I, of course, am challenging that very forcefully, I hope.
Mr. Blair, one thing that Mr. Schreiber noted when he came into Maryland and was spending that running against Governor Mandel was that he could detect no significant anti-Mandel vote, that the man's low profile had prevented any significant anti-vote from developing against him. I wonder how you intend to grapple with that problem.
I think Mr. Schreiber was essentially correct. That was undoubtedly one of his problems because Governor Mandel had maintained a rather low profile. I think that's still the case. He's coming more and more into focus, and I hope the campaigns will sharpen both his image and mine. And it's a difficult problem, because as long as you can maintain a low profile, then you've alienated very few people. That's the purpose of the campaign. It's also the purpose, quite frankly, of some of my challenges to him, and also why I would like to debate him. I don't think that the people have the clear image of our present governor, and that's exactly what Sergeant Shriver found.
Blair, in addition to the people that are already on your staff, do you expect to have any more assistance from the White House or the administration in your campaign?
I have no plans for any. I'm not aware of it, other than, I assume you're talking other than the vice presidential appearance that I've mentioned.
Right.
I have no plans for additional people, certainly not from the White House. I have no, I'd be very happy, incidentally, to have some support from the President of the United States at the appropriate time, but beyond that, no.
You expect that if the President were to come in, that he would come in for you, or would you rather come in for Glenn Beall?
I think he'd come in for both, because clearly the senatorial race offers some interesting prospects from the standpoint of the President. The President is very interested in gubernatorial races, and I would hope that he would come in for both of us, and we'd expect him to.
How close will your campaign be tied to Beall? Would it be a sort of a tandem effort, or will you be going your amiable ways?
No, we won't be going our own amiable ways entirely. Glenn Beall is, of course, a close friend and political associate, and we entered this, in a sense, together. Clearly, he has some things to do that I don't have to do. He has a different constituency in part. He has a different race, but I think we're going to tie together. In fact, I know we are, with respect to staff assistance, where we can help each other, joint appearances, where we can do that, and any boost that one can give the other.
What do you mean you don't have the same, he doesn't have the same constituency?
Well, I'm thinking of the national office, in the sense that he has some issues that I don't have, he has some interests that I don't have, so far as his particular election is concerned.
In viewing the return of the Democratic primary the other day, I'm wondering how you would rate Mr. Beall's chances.
I rate him as excellent. I think, without question, in my mind, Glenn Beall has the bright prospect of being the next United States Senator from Maryland. And I would go so far as to say I think his chances were enhanced by the fact that Senator Tidings became the nominee under the circumstances that he did. It draws a clearer issue in my mind, because Senator Tidings has a record that positions him as far more liberal, I think, than Glenn Beall. I don't think that is a reflection of the majority of the people of the state of Maryland today. So I think we have a much clearer division or clearer line of demarcation between the two candidates than we would had George Mahoney been the nominee.
You said winning under the circumstances. What circumstances?
The circumstances I'm referring to are the very stiff challenge that George Mahoney was able to mount. Certainly Senator Tidings won, and I congratulate him for that, but he didn't win by a landslide by any means. There's some very strong opposition to his candidacy, and I think that opposition is not going to disappear between now and the general election.
Are you saying that Mr. Mahoney would have given Mr. Blair a tougher fight than Mr. Tidings will?
Blair or Beall?
Mr. Beall, I mean, I'm sorry.
Excuse me, would you ask it again?
Are you saying that Mr. Beall would have had a tougher fight against Mr. Mahoney than he will with Mr. Tidings?
Not necessarily that he would have had a tougher fight, but I don't think the divisions would have been as clear, the issues would have been as clear, and I don't think the people of Maryland would have had as easy a time making up their mind, quite frankly.
You said Tuesday night that you were going to, I recall the phrase, lift the lid from the State House and cover the worms. How soon will you be killing some worms?
Well, that's not an unexpected question, Jim. It was the dome, and it was the worms in the woodwork, and what I'm referring to there, it's a figure of speech, and perhaps a colorful one. What I'm referring to is not necessarily people, but problems. I'm referring to the way, really, in which Mr. Mandel has conducted his stewardship of the state thus far, and I've been critical and will continue to be critical of a number of the things that he's done. So that's the sort of thing I'm talking about, and I've already referred to some of them in the course of the press conferences and statements I've made so far.
How do you regard the proposed State Housing Authority law that's coming to referendum in November?
As really not worth the effort, in the effort in the sense of it doesn't frame a very clear issue for the people of Maryland. I was quite surprised when I read this law, because it has been amended in the General Assembly to the point of compromise that the Housing Authority, the State Housing Authority, would have no power to act without the permission of the local subdivisions. In addition to that, I say act, I'm talking about acquire land, it would have no power to build public housing without the permission of the local authorities. And under the circumstances, I think it's a very hollow promise.
What did you... Would you prefer the bill as it was originally introduced?
I'm not sure if it's how it was introduced originally. I've seen it only in its finished form, indicating that it had been amended. I assume that in its original form it probably was a stronger bill, and I would have preferred it, yes.
I mean, you think that the housing authority should have the right to go in and condemn land and build these projects without local approval?
If you're going to... No, not entirely without local approval, no. I wouldn't say that. But if you're going to put this sort of legislation through, and of course this one's on referendum, I think it doesn't become a serious question unless it has the authority to do what your question suggests, and it doesn't have it right now. It's hard to oppose it because I just don't think it does very much. I oppose it on principle, and that it purportedly is a piece of major legislation, whereas in fact I think it does very little.
If you're in favor of local approval on condemnation,
No, I'm not saying I'm favoring local approval on condemnation. I'm saying that the bill as it is now requires it. Under those circumstances, if you're talking about building public housing in any of the counties, it's unlikely that's going to happen under this bill. I would prefer to see the bill in a much stronger form if it's going to be approved by the people of Maryland, so that in fact you can condemn land for public housing without local approval.
Isn't it true that every county, state now under state law has authority to go ahead and create its own housing authority and to apply for federal money?
I believe that's true. I'm not sure about every county in the state, but as far as I know, you're probably correct. The difference there is, of course, that the county can do it. In this case, the state can do it. And when you're talking about dealing with problems of people and housing on a statewide basis, I don't think you can leave it to the local jurisdictions to exercise the best judgment for the people of the state. And I think that's what we've run into.
There are a lot of Republicans who do not vote in the primary. Do you think coming in November that you're going to pull off a lot of strength?
I certainly hope so. I was very pleased with the fact that I had 81% of the Republican vote. And particularly pleased when I think back that we spent virtually nothing on advertising in this primary and sent out no brochures. So I was delighted under the circumstances that we got that much. I would hope we're going to get a great deal more, of course.
Have you heard from Peter James?
I talked with Peter James last night, yes. I talked with him about an invitation that I was extending over the telephone last night to a party that we're holding at headquarters tonight for all candidates in the Republican primary, win, lose, or draw. And I expect him to be there tonight.
Did he say he'd support your campaign?
We didn't talk about that, but he said he'd be delighted to come up to headquarters tonight, and that has certain influences for me, at least.
How do you think Dave Benders will do against Paul Sarbanes?
I would hope very well. I'm not sufficiently acquainted with that particular constituency. To know, but I've seen Dave Fentress both in his capacity as the deputy insurance commissioner and in a personal one before that. I think he's a very capable man and certainly should be a good candidate.
Would you term him more liberal than you are, more liberal than Republican?
I am not sufficiently acquainted to know, quite honestly, because I didn't deal with him in a policy way, and I don't know what his views are.
During the primary, Governor Mandel, on several occasions,
you say toyed with them?
Toured.
I didn't mean that. Fun. I didn't mean it. Yeah.
The there's been some suggestion that you haven't spent much time with your running mates. Do you intend to spend more time with him?
Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, I do. And I don't know where the suggestion came from, but it's probably accurate in the sense that I made a tour of the state of Maryland, and they were sent and went other places. We will probably be traveling as a group for most of the campaign. Now, there'll be obvious exceptions to that. But I would like to have them with me, and I think we'll be traveling together a good bit.
Do you think that Mandel's running now with Tidings as a ticket thing will hurt Mandel in some way?
It's a fact. I don't know whether it's going to hurt or help. But without question, I think they are running as a ticket, just as Glenn Bell and I at this point will be running as a ticket. I think it tends to give the governor a position that he might not have had if he were not running with them. Well, that doesn't make much sense. Let me rephrase it. It links them together and certainly affects Mr. Mandel's chances. Now, I don't know whether it's good or bad. I don't know whether it's plus or minus. But without any question, their fortunes are tied together. Indeed, it might. I just don't know how many people take it as a team and how many split it. And looking at the vote, I still don't know after the primary.
You said Tuesday night that not be a pleasant campaign. What exactly did you mean by that?
I mean that I have to be, in the position that I now occupy as a nominee of my party, very critical of the present administration, Mr. Mandel's administration, in all of those areas where I think he's open to criticism. And I mean nothing more than that when I say unpleasant. It just isn't the most pleasant thing to be critical, even in a constructive way. And I have no choice in that because I think there are some very serious derelictions in his performance thus far.
Do you think you'll reach the point where you'll be engaging in personalities?
I don't think so, no. It's certainly not my disposition to do that, and I didn't mean that when I said unpleasant.
Gentlemen, any more questions?
It's nice and warm up here this morning.
Cool.
Thank you, gentlemen.
I have it downstairs.
Certainly hope so.
Code on licenses. We've just concluded a meeting with the Board of Supervisors of Elections of Baltimore City, the mayor, the attorney general, the board of the State Board of Supervisors, asking for information relative to some of the possible irregularities that took place in the recent election in Baltimore City. The purpose of the reason was to get the factual information as to what did occur and then see if there are any suggestions that could be made to correct some of the problems. We had this meeting for some time discussing what happened. There were wrong deliveries to wrong buildings for polling places. Apparently, from the Attorney General's investigation since the election, most of the polling places, or all of the polling places, were open and voting by 11 o'clock in the morning, but there is no real excuse for not having the polling places operating at the proper time. There's going to be a continuing look at all of the facts surrounding the election day problems. There have been suggestions made by the mayor and the attorney general and myself to correct some of the problems so that they won't happen in the future, such as having police tabulate the results on election night as they used to do, to also have the police reassigned back into the polling places again as they used to do on election day to help to see that the precincts are operated properly, and also to have a check on the delivery of voting machines and on the polling places. These things will all be done while we will continue to assess the problem that did exist on election day to get some complete information.
Will you eliminate paper in the primary?
Well, I think both the mayor and I are agreed that there should be legislation at the next legislature, similar to what was introduced back in 1965, to put the Board of Supervisors under the merit system.
Are there any indications, or did it come out in the meeting, that any of these ballots, so to speak, with the supervisors of election duty may have actually hurt some candidates?
There's no way to determine that. There's no indication from the facts that we have at hand, and I want to clarify that. There's no indication that there was anything other than some inefficiency on the part of some of the people working as contractors, or perhaps some of the people working with Supervisors.
Governor, may I add just a statement with respect to that particular point, that we have made an analysis of the 7th Congressional voting in 1968 as compared to 1970. And in all of the precincts except one, it appears that somewhere between maybe 25% and 50% more people actually voted in the congressional race in the 7th Congressional District in 1970 than did vote for the same race in 1968. So it indicates at least there was an opportunity for a very large number of people to vote in these particular precincts.
Do you attribute that to the sensitivity of the issues in Canada?
It could be, but it doesn't mean that some people may not have had the opportunity to vote if they had to work quite late, but it does indicate that there was a considerable vote. We don't have the answer for you.
What the Attorney General, the point that the Attorney General is making is that the precincts actually voted more voters in this election than they did 2 years ago, so that there is an indication that while there was some inefficiency, that the people did have an opportunity to vote.
Will there at least be on hand at the polling places and for the counting and so on for the general election?
The commissioner has already said that the police department, he's contacted the mayor and told the mayor that they will handle the tabulating. We have not discussed with them as yet. This was a suggestion made at our meeting, and we will discuss with him returning and assigning a patrolman to each precinct for election day, so that if there's any claim of any improprieties in those polling places, there will be a policeman on hand.
Governor, this proposed legislation that you hope to introduce, plan to introduce in the 71 session of the General Assembly, this would take it out of the patronage system that you desire. How do you plan to accommodate the politicians? I mean, do you think they'll go along with it or not?
Well, I think that, as I said, back in 1965, we introduced the same legislation. It passed the House of Delegates. It did not pass the Senate. But I think now that there comes a time in all legislative processes when you say the time has arrived. And I think right now the time has arrived to try to remove from the Board of Supervisors in Baltimore City any problems of the employees that we have there by putting them under the merit system. And I think that the political people, the House of Delegates was prepared at that time to go along, and that was 5 years ago. I think that the Senate will be prepared to go along, too.
How would the transition be made? You would probably have to put some people in jobs now out of jobs to go under the merit.
No, I think that at least I would suggest that all of the present employees be allowed to take the merit system examination, and if they finish in the first five, that they be given the job, the same as you give a veteran's preference on state employment. You give the present employees the preference if they finish in the first five in the examination. They thereby show that they're qualified, and they would get the preference for the position. That would be my recommendation.
There would be no grandfather clause.
No grandfather clause, but they would be, one, permitted to take the exam, and two, if they finish in the first five, that they would be the appointee.
Governor,
for the first time.
Governor, what is any
I have no assurances. How can I have any assurance? I don't even know who the senators are going to be. I don't even know if I'm going to be governor. And you're asking me a question I can't answer.
If there was, how do you know this is going to happen?
All I can say is I'm going to try. How do I know you're going to be here tomorrow? You're going to try to be here tomorrow, aren't you? I mean, living. I can't answer that. I'm going to say this is what we're going to propose to do. Well, the supervisor of elections are starting their official canvass today. they have two processes that they go through. One is a canvas of the official returns from the judges, and then they check the machines in those instances where they don't have the automatic printout. And they do both of these to assure that there is no problem along those lines. There's two ways of checking it, which both of them they do, and they're starting that today.
You have no indications of fraud, though, in that respect?
We have no indication of any fraud on anyone's part.
No efforts to disenfranchise in the second vote?
We have no evidence of that.
Governor, do you and the Attorney General and Mayor have any indication that these irregularities were intentional, or were they just from stupidity?
We have no evidence of any intentional violations, and we don't have any evidence of stupidity either. What we have is evidence of mistakes made by a few people, and we think, or at least I think, I don't want to talk for the other two, they'll talk for themselves, but from what we have heard at this point, there is no evidence of anything other than unintentional mistakes.
Well, can the Attorney General give us some assessment, one, of how widespread the problems were, and two, were they limited to certain districts, or were they widespread throughout the
thus far, the information we have is that there were about 14 precincts in the 4th and 5th congressional districts. I mean, the legislative districts, which make up part of the 7th congressional. Of the 14 precincts, 13 of them, I believe, were fairly heavy precincts in favor of Mr. Mitchell. There were problems in other parts of the city, but the ones that we addressed our attention to were in these particular precincts because of the critical nature of the race and the closeness of the race, the apparent closeness of the race. Other than that, I would say that there really isn't much more.
If you said there were problems in other parts of the city, were there significant?
This
particular problem that was found in there, or is it really?
Let me point out that one of the occasions for the mistakes, as we have been able to analyze, is that there were about 14 to 16 polling places where the addresses had been changed from the 1968 election, or the last election, to the present election. As a result of this, and most of those were in the area we're speaking of, what happened is you had about 7 addresses where the machines were delivered to the wrong place. In other words, they should have been in this school here instead of that school there. In 2 instances, when the machines arrived at the schools, the custodian of the building said that the particular location in that school that they were supposed to deliver them to was not in fact there, such as room 104. There wasn't any room 104. It had been broken, demolished. He then directed them to place the machines in the boiler room. So in 2 instances, there were machines that were down in the boiler room, and when the judges of election came, the machines were where they weren't supposed to be, so they had to get them out of the boiler room and bring them upstairs. In the other instances, where there was a school here and a school there, they had to move them from this school over to the other school because the published address of the location for voting was the other school. And these were primarily the areas of difficulty insofar as misdirection of machines were concerned, but it seemed to us that primarily it was due to the fact that the polling places had been changed and the room being torn down, so to speak. The only other thing would be some machines were broken. In other words, didn't function right, which caused the polling place to open a little late. Most of the polling places opened, I would say, in the area we're speaking of, within an hour to an hour and a half after the appointed time. There were several that opened around 10:45 to 11, and there was one, I think, the latest that opened at 11:45.
11:45. Well, are you investigating the irregularities in the other areas? You said there were other irregularities. The thing I'm trying to get is how widespread were the other?
Well, I don't think it was particularly widespread. Mr. Sweeney, who was here, had some other notes, which we just got this morning, by the way. We only received the report from Baltimore City Police as of, I think, 11 o'clock this morning, indicating a complete resume of all of the mechanical breakdowns and misdeliveries throughout the city. There were only about 2 other misdeliveries, weren't there?
2 other misdeliveries. The other irregularities or difficulties concerned either jammed machines or a machine on which one lever was not operating correctly. They were citywide. It would be fair to say that most of the jobs were concentrated in the 4th and 5th legislative district.
From a present information, yes.
Did you have any complaints from citizens who said they were unable to vote because they couldn't get into the polling place?
Well, as part of our investigation, we tried to ascertain from the judges of election how many people were turned away from the polls when the machines weren't operating or were not in place. I would say, and I don't want to be held to these figures, I would say that there were somewhere in the neighborhood, according to the reports we have, maybe 200 to 250, plus a possible undetermined number in addition to that. But, of course, we have no way of knowing whether those who were not able to vote at the time they went to the poll for the first time, whether they came back a second time and voted. One of the factors that I pointed out about the large actual the large amount of people voting, it might suggest, but it doesn't prove it by a long shot, might suggest that those who wanted to vote had 8 to 12 hours to do it and came back. I can foresee the possibility that some didn't come back.
Do you have any complaints from anybody who said you were turned away and then did not come back?
No.
In each case, of course, there's an answer, it's been a negative answer, is that there is no evidence to indicate that there's any problem. Can you make a positive statement? There is evidence.
No, because we're not completely concluded in the investigation.
We didn't say there
any other
any
facts
problem.
That are brought to our attention. The Civil Rights Commission is meeting tomorrow. They're having a public hearing on this tomorrow. We have turned over all of the information that we have to the commission. We have also given them other information we have with respect to some alleged irregularities at the polls and the names of people who have called us saying that there were irregularities at the polls by some of the candidates or some of the people working on behalf of some of the candidates. And they are making the investigation in this area.
Is the Federal Civil Rights Commission?
Yes.
Where is the area going to be held?
Post office.
Federal office building.
Federal office building.
What's that, 9?
Tomorrow at 9 o'clock, yes.
It is the Maryland Advisory Commission of that.
The same commission that handled the the hearing is just about two or three weeks ago in Baltimore City, Baltimore County. That's the President's Advisory Commission.
Father Hesburgh?
Yeah, I think it's his commission.
Yeah, it's the same commission, only it's the Maryland Advisory Commission, which is a subordinate board of that name.
Was there specially called because of these complaints?
They advised us today that they had written complaints from some people about the election day proceedings, and as a result, under their authority to investigate any possible violation of civil rights, they were having this hearing tomorrow.
Mr. Mayor, what role will Manpower Incorporated play in the
election? Well, we've asked the Attorney General's office, as well as the Board of Election Supervisors and the State Director of Supervisors of Elections, to get together and critique the various contracts that are now underway. There are contracts for both the primary and general election. And based on their analysis and review, to submit to us at the Board of Estimates recommendations as to whether or not they want to follow through with the contracts or travel another route. I think it's interesting to note that that's all that the Board of Estimates does is used as a vehicle by which these contracts are advertised and let.
Well, let me say this, that interestingly enough, we have yet to get one factual complaint from Mr. Mitchell. He has given us no information on anything. He hasn't given us any details as to any complaints that he's had, so we were absolutely without any opportunity to look into or investigate. And this began as of 12 o'clock, 12:30 on Tuesday election day, right up to as recently, I think, as yesterday, when Mr. Sweeney talked to Mr. Mitchell, who said he was having the Department of Justice look into this, said he preferred not to give the information that he had in hand to us.
Do you know that he is going to the Department of Justice?
I assume so. We have been in touch with the United States Attorney in Maryland and advised the United States Attorney that we would appreciate it if he would advise the appropriate people in the Department of Justice that we stand ready to cooperate in every possible way to give them 100% cooperation on the one hand. If they wished us to, we will lend our aid and our facilities to the investigation.
The indication why you should go over the state's head and go directly to the...
Well, I'm not a prima donna. I personally didn't enjoy that lack of confidence, if I guess that's what you might call it. But we're going to do the best we can. We have looked into everything, and we stand ready to assist anybody and everybody who has the proper authority to continue the investigation.
General, is there anything in the Maryland law that authorizes you or the governor to nullify a congressional primary?
I don't know if there's anything in the law to authorize the governor or us or anybody to nullify any election.
So you have to stand on what
the ballot cast is? No, not necessarily, because the candidate who may have been defrauded of his rightful election has the right to go into court and have the court declare it as being in violation of the law and null and void, and therefore order a new election. It's an extraordinary remedy, but it has been done and it can be done.
The court can do it?
Yes.
Governor, would you mind, again, outlining the role of the police department in the general election?
Well, as I said, the police commissioner has already notified the mayor that they will conduct the canvass at the close of the election as they used to do in prior years. We're going to ask the police department if they will furnish one policeman or a policeman in each polling place as they used to do to make sure that the election is conducted within that precinct properly.
Will an official count be, or rather it will be an unofficial count, but will a full count be made election night?
Well, as I understood the procedure, and I must say that this procedure is not required by law, but as an accommodation to the public and also the news media, they conduct a canvass the night of the election and give the total returns for each office. The police used to handle that. This year they didn't. They are going back to handling it.
So they will handle it election night?
Yes, they have informed the mayor that they will handle it election
night. Governor, let me make one further comment. I don't want to leave anybody with the wrong impression, because apropos the remark I made about Mr. Mitchell saying he didn't want to give us any details as to any information, I do want to point this out, that at 12:30 on election day, Mr. Sweeney met with Mr. Mitchell and Mr. Allen and a number of other people who had raised a question about the polls opening late, which time he offered them our complete cooperation to do anything and everything to see that the situation was corrected if it still continued, or to investigate the matter. And furthermore, offered to be stand ready to go with them into court based upon whatever facts they were able to determine insofar as any impropriety. We had in mind, as a matter of fact, that if the they had evidence that the polls, that some people were going to not have the opportunity to get to the polls, that they could then ask the court to extend the time within which the polling places should be open. And we stood ready at that point, if that was the relief that they would ask us to consent to such relief. But they made no request of us with respect to any aid or help whatsoever. And that is as of 12:30 on election day.
The police used to do it as a matter of course. Then they stopped and they used roving squads of police now to move around to different precincts. We believe that on election day, in view of the fact now that schools are closed as a result of recent law, that taverns and bars are closed, that the police could handle this particular assignment for that day and would not create any great burden as far as removing from the streets the protection of the police department. Polling place is open to 13 hours and 150 people vote in a polling place. That's only,
without going into the details,
a little over 10 an hour.
Sorry, excuse me.
Go ahead.
Without going into the specific precincts, one polling place said that estimated 30 to 40 people were turned away. Another one, 40. another one 25, a fourth one 15, another one 20, another one 30, another one 35, and as to the rest, they said no estimate was made, it was undetermined. So that's where I get my figures. I added up what their reports were that were turned in to us. They were made election night and were taken by the police department and delivered to my office at 8:30 Wednesday morning.
250 is actually only from what, 5 or 6 of the 15 of the estimated?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 out of 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 13, 14. Somewhere around 200 to 250 plus, probably some in addition, because now one of them makes the comment that, as the one I gave you on 20, that most of them returned. Now that's the only one that made that particular comment.
These people were turned away during the day?
No. They came to the polling place at 7 o'clock to vote, and the polling machines weren't there or they were broken down. So they left. Now, did they come back? I can't tell you whether they came back. One of the group of judges said most of them came back. That's right. They were in the 4th and 5th legislative district.
Governor,
did
Governor Andrews' election report and election
58
also provide for
voting
election board
workers? I think that I introduced that legislation. I think there was, yes. I think for the same reason it hasn't passed prior years. We tried ever since I first introduced it in 65 to get the bill through. We haven't been successful. I was successful one year in getting it through the House, but I never got it out of the Senate committee.
Is that your bill, Governor?
Yes, in 1965.
Thank you,
all right.
Anyone who pollutes or causes to pollute, and I'm using the word pollute probably not exactly correctly, but who pollutes or causes to pollute the waters of the harbor or the bay, either by neglect, other than by unavoidable accident, or by intent, shall be guilty of having violated the pollution statutes of Maryland and shall be subject to these particular fines.
Mr. Burke, is there a possibility that more than one party might be indicted, or one party may...
It's always possible, yes, sir.
Is it probable?
I can't tell you.
General.
I can only say this, that... there was somebody on the shore, there was somebody on the barge, so there are at least two parties involved, so anything's possible.
Burke,
I said at least two parties.
Is it correct to assume that these new procedures that are going to be adopted by Natural Resources will also apply to the facility finding point where
I would say that whatever the order is on the new hearings that I'm going to recommend to the Department of Natural Resources, that anybody who's engaged in the loading of wool from land to sea should be required to meet certain minimum standards with respect to the procedures for loading so as to avoid any possible spillage in the future.
And the hearings you recommended would be hearings to determine whether these companies are complying?
I would suggest that the board will want to review what the various oil companies are doing in the way of loading, what their procedures are, what the safeguards are that they have come up with to avoid a spillage, and if they're not satisfied that they are the most modern and ones that are most likely to avoid the situation in the future, they will then issue the order directing that they make certain adjustments to their procedures. I might say this has been true in all of the areas of the enforcement of the pollution laws. You take a number of the industrial plants, they go in, they review and analyze, they make them submit a plan as to how they will try to correct the situation. If they find the plan acceptable, they approve it and then order compliance. If they find it not acceptable, they make them come back or they give them suggestions as to how the plan can be adopted, following which they then issue the order. But we have shortened the time considerably by virtue of the new statute which went into effect on the 1st of July. We really had a very, very bad enforcement statute in Maryland. I would say we're now in a position where we're probably up among the leaders of the country as far as the other states are concerned in a streamlined enforcement provision, and we intend to see that that's fully complied with.
You're talking about anti-pollution provisions or what?
I'm talking about particularly the enforcement. We have excellent anti-pollution laws. We have now been given the tools to see that they are enforceable, and we intend to see it, and I'm reorganizing our whole setup in this office in relationship to the various other agencies that are charged with certain overseeing of the compliance with the pollution laws of the state of Maryland. I'm reorganizing this to make sure that we are able to correct these situations with the minimum of lost time.
Would you take one question on another subject?
Sure, I'll take any questions on any subject. I may not be able to give you an answer to this.
Judge Walter yesterday requested an immediate or quick opinion on municipal court attorneys.
Who pays the fees for the attorneys that have to go in and represent?
Have you got an opinion on that yet?
No, I have not. As a matter of fact, to the best of my knowledge, we have not received a formal request from Judge Foster, and we always await the formal request because a lot depends upon the manner in which the question is presented as to how the answer comes out. So we want to wait until we receive his formal request. Following that, we'll do the appropriate research, and then we'll come up with an opinion.
Do you have any idea what you might likely face?
That's one of the most dangerous pastimes an attorney general could ever engage in, is trying to give an opinion as to what his answer might be until he's had a chance to see, one, the question, and see what the law is on the other hand.
Will the civil suit have any? Will the criminal suit have any bearing on the civil suit?
Or it should not.
To get an indictment, you could still go ahead with the civil suit.
If we could go in, we could have a presentation to the grand jury, and nobody could be indicted, and we would still have the opportunity to go and proceed civilly. We could go in, and we could have everybody indicted, and still be able to proceed.